Hello, my name is Liam Stack and I'm the chairperson of the IAPF Investment Committee. You're very welcome to what is our first investment podcast. This is a new initiative to help bring snapshots of relevant investment topics to IAPF members. We hope you enjoy the podcast, and as always, we value your feedback and input. So please do get in touch if there are any topics you'd like to suggest. To begin, I want to welcome Patrick O'Connor. Patrick's a senior associate at Mason Hayes & Curran LLP. Patrick and I will be running over what has happened in Irish pensions over 2020. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Liam. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good. Right, so first question. I think it's impossible to talk about 2020 without mentioning COVID-19, despite fatigue from everyone. But, you know, has the Pensions Authority been active enough in providing guidance to trustees and employers during the pandemic?
Thanks very much, Liam. The Pensions Authority has been relatively active. It issued an initial COVID-19 announcement in March and followed it with a further update on the 24th of April, I believe. The initial announcement suggested that scheme trustees contact administrators and service providers to assess the effect of the crisis on their schemes. It also asked trustees to prioritise payments to retired members and to ensure generally the contributions paid by members and employers were remitted promptly to trustees. That announcement also confirmed that the authority would take the circumstances of the pandemic into account when assessing the completion of regulatory tasks by trustees and administrators. In the further update in April, the authority addressed some of the main concerns held by stakeholders on compliance and contributions in particular. It confirmed that the authority did not have power to waive statutory requirements in respect of deadlines, as that was an issue, though it noted that, again, that it would take the circumstances created by the pandemic into account when assessing compliance, including requirements relating to member communication and disclosure obligations. The update did confirm that trustees and service providers will be expected to remain very member-focused and showed that reasonable efforts are being undertaken to meet statutory obligations.
Patrick, just on IRP2, you know, we're now the last country in the EU to transpose this. Has there been any update on the transposition of the directive during the pandemic? And when do you expect the legislation to be introduced?
Thanks, Liam. Yeah, no, it has been very topical. And I guess in Ireland, we have a unique experience in the lead up to transposing regulations. Many listeners will be aware, of course, that in March of 2019, the Association of Pension Trustees of Ireland, or APTI, made a High Court application by way of judicial review that sought various reliefs against the Minister for Employment Affairs and Social Protection concerning transposition of the IRP2 directive into Irish law. Amongst the relief sought was a declaration by the High Court confirming that IRP2 is not applicable to single member pension schemes. And of course, that is the area of most interest for APTI. In addition, it sought a declaration that the application of certain discretionary provisions of IRP2 to single member schemes would be unreasonable, disproportionate, and irrational exercise of the members' discretion. The matter was adjourned in October 2019 to allow time for the minister to consider it. As 2020 progressed, we saw a change of government as well as the pandemic. So there's been no surprise that we've yet to see primary legislation or implementing regulations for the directive. It is expected now that implementation will occur by way of transposing regulations as opposed to primary legislation. In a statement published with the Pensions Authority's annual accounts, the regulator stated that he was expecting legislation by the end of the year. Though some now feel that we're not going to see it until late quarter one, 2021, or even early quarter two of next year. Of course, once the directive does become part of Irish law, the pensions industry as a whole is going to see significant changes. DB schemes, for instance, will see an enhanced level of supervision and involvement from the authority, as well as categorisations based on each scheme's ability to meet proposed benefits. The existing funding standard will be complemented as well by a number of new metrics relating to solvency, sustainability and risk. Towards the end of the year, the Pensions Authority also circulated a survey to trustees of DC and DB schemes. Each survey had 7 questions that focused entirely on IRP2 preparation. So the survey, for many, can be seen as a further effort by the authority to focus the minds of trustees before the new legislation is published. At the recent IAPF governance conference, the regulator confirmed that the authority's guidance for Irish pension schemes and directive will not be available until after the directive has actually been transposed. He added that the purpose of that guidance would be to add to the content of the new regulations, and that, of course, this could not be done until the finalised regulations themselves were published.
Patrick, thanks for that. Will you share your thoughts on developments relating to the state pension age during state pension during 2020?
It was, I suppose, unsurprising that the state pension age became a battleground during the election campaign. We saw a range of promises from all the parties. Some parties promised to halt the planned increase to 67 in 2021 and to reintroduce 65 as the age at which the state benefit will become payable. Others took a different approach, suggesting that the employers could be forced to stop seeking compulsory retirement at 65. The outcome, as we know, is that the planned increase to 67 was scrapped. As that was included in the programme for government in June, so it came as no surprise that was confirmed by Budget 2021. Despite all this, it is still expected that the state pension age will have to increase incrementally in the coming years, given the pressure that an ageing population and longer life expectancies will put on the exchequer. Any such increase will certainly assist in mitigating a potential choice that will be faced down the road by a future government of, you know, cutting state pension age or potentially increasing PRSI.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat inevitable. It has to increase, isn't it? Just coming back to the regulations piece, the transposing regulations for the Second Shareholder Rights Directive passed pretty much under the radar for many in 2020 because of the pandemic. Have you any thoughts on these regulations for trustees?
Yeah, the regulations introduced transparency requirements for institutional investors, which does include pension schemes where they fall within the definition of relevant institutional investor in the regulations. To fall within that definition, a scheme will need to meet both requirements of a two-part test. So the scheme must be an occupational pension scheme regulated in Ireland, and it must invest directly or through an asset manager and shares traded on an EU regulated market. In practice, the vast majority of group schemes will be in scope and will need to consider the public disclosure requirement that relates to their interactions with asset managers and investment managers. They will need to publicly disclose on an annual basis how their engagement policy has been implemented, including providing information on voting behaviour and any significant votes taken. In terms of how the disclosures are made, EIOPA suggested that the engagement policy disclosures might be integrated into each scheme's IORP statement of investment policy. However, this makes the assumption that that statement is to be publicly disclosed. In the UK, for instance, the institutional investor aspect of the directive has been implemented in a more direct manner, and a view has been taken that disclosure to members is not sufficient to constitute public disclosure. So many schemes in the UK have implemented the necessary disclosure via sponsoring employer websites.
Okay, cheers, Patrick. The fifth and final question, just to keep this snappy, but probably save one of the most talked about topics for the final question. Responsible investment and ESG, when the directive is transposed, what does it mean for trustees and what will they have to do?
ESG, of course, has absolutely been very topical in the last couple of years, and certainly during the pandemic. You will obviously be more familiar on the financial side and the market side of how ESG scoring shares have done or ESG scoring assets have done. I mean, the first weeks of the pandemic, some questioned whether the rapid deterioration in asset prices would lead to managers and investors abandoning, to some extent anyway, ESG criteria. However, in general, my understanding is that ESG scoring shares have outperformed in 2020, and particular climate-focused stocks have done particularly well, though this was partly attributable to the oil price war and oversupply. Article 19 of the directive will add further considerations for trustees of schemes before making an investment decision. The article provides that pension scheme investments should be made in accordance with what's known as the prudent person rule. Broadly speaking, this rule means that a person or a corporate given discretion over the investments of another's assets must only acquire investments or take risks with that account that a person of average intelligence average intelligence would consider wise or prudent. So that's that rule, that prudent person rule. Within that rule, pension schemes then are permitted to focus on the long-term impact of their investment decisions on the environment, on social issues, and on corporate governance concerns, also, of course, known as ESG factors. Essentially, trustees should understand ESG factors in the context of overall financial performance. Otherwise, beyond that, there are no legal barriers to taking ESG factors into account when adopting an investment strategy for their schemes. In terms of potential next steps, then that trustees might look at when making taking ESG and investing and ESG factors into account, they should probably take advice in the legal and regulatory responsibilities. So, you know, we'll see how that looks in the regulations when they are published next year. Consider the financial performance of ESG investing before building it in as part of their scheme's overall investment strategy. And then, you know, consider updating the scheme statement of investment policy principles as well to include ESG factors.
That's great. Many thanks for your time, Patrick. It's really great to have that overview. I think hopefully when we do the same next year, we will have seen significant movements in the pensions landscape in Ireland.
I think so, Liam. Yeah, I think so. And thanks very much for having me on.
So all that remains for me is to thank you for listening. We hope that you will tune in regularly to the podcast from the IPF Investment Committee. It's the first sort of tangible output that we've put together for our members using this functionality. So as always, though, we are keen for feedback. So if you have any, please share it with us with the IPF online via info@iapf.ie. Thank you.